when Dylan came the first time, we had a small little meetup and just really fun to go talk to the fans, talk to them in person, and just kind of talk about, see kind of who's on the other side of the screen. And then next time he came back, so that was in May. He came back in September and he told me, John, I want to do something big when I get here. I want to do something big. And I was like, what do you mean big? Because he wants to do like a full seminar, like a full symposium. So I was like, are you kidding me? And he said he wants to have 500 people there. And so we're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? But we find a convention hall. We rent that. And then all of us start just marketing this hard. Free ticket, show up, learn about AI. We brought guests and we have everything. And I think we had 500 people sign up.
I need to remind you, I also help you to stick.
Yes. Yes. Even help me assign the seating.
I was the walker.
Yeah. I was just calling in all favors saying like we need to, because just three guys could not handle this much of a crowd. And then it was insane. Dylan hurt his ankle. He needed to get Chinese medicine done on it. And then he was late and, you know, one of our producers had to drive him over. Thank you, Rita. Into the event, and he showed up with like 30 minutes late. Yeah, it was crazy, but it was really fun, and I would definitely not do it again.
This is Startup Island Taiwan, the channel all about cutting edge technology, influential global tech players, and Taiwan.
Welcome to the Startup Island Taiwan podcast. My name is John from Asianometry, and today I'm interviewing, or actually, I'm the guest today.
Yeah, be interviewed by us. Hi, I'm Chico. Hello, everyone.
Hi, I'm Wendy.
And after many episodes, I finally am on the other side, and I'm being interviewed by these two.
How do you feel right now?
Feels weird because, you know, going for so many episodes and being asking all these questions, now I have to start answering them and talk about myself and what I think. And that's weird.
I think audience must be pretty curious about you.
A little bit, I guess, but I'll say nothing.
I knew John around 3 years and I first met him at a small meeting rooms, and I noticed his YouTube channels and just wrote an email and said, yeah, I want to say hi. And at that time, John only had around 140K followers, quite small.
Very small.
So that's why he had time to meet me. And we talked a lot about what we want to do regarding of the technology contents. And 3 years later, John's already, I checked yesterday, his YouTube channel has around 16K followers. Yeah, no, he don't have time to meet us and he's quite busy, travel around, and a lot of big conferences invite him for the fancy hotels, and now he's gonna leave Taiwan and just say some angry words about Taiwan. So we can talk all about this in this episode.
Not true at all. I love it here.
So I think at the beginning, we want to let our audience know that why do you come to Taiwan at the first time and why do you decide to stay here?
I think I must have told the story 100 times now, but it's still fun every time. So, you know, I worked in Silicon Valley for about 10 years. And I worked in marketing and I did a little bit of coding. I went to like a boot camp and all that. That was a crazy boot camp. Like you work for like 2 months all day doing coding questions. A lot of people slept on the floor. And then after you graduate, you get a job. And then basically you have to pay like 20% of your salary or something. So I did coding for a bit, got a job, and I hated it. And then went back to marketing. But after 10 years, I kind of was done. I was really tired and I wanted to kind of find more purpose in life and didn't know what to do. And I figured I would go to Asia. I wasn't sure where in Asia I would go, just like a vague idea that I just wanted to kind of go across the Pacific a little bit. Maybe it was like a vacation. And I put out job applications to jobs in Singapore, Taiwan, Hong Kong, Shanghai, and Japan. And I got offers for all of them. And in the end, I just picked Taipei because it was simply, they gave me the best offer. Really was just down to that. But when I came to Taiwan back in 2016, I kind of thought this would be, you know, temporary thing. I thought I would live in Taiwan for like, you know, 6 months. And yeah, that was 7 years ago. It's pretty crazy. And why I decided to stay, it was simply just because I really liked it here. And, you know, it's hard to kind of say goodbye again to all the people you meet. And the people in Taiwan I met are so great. And it was really hard for me to say bye. So I never said bye. I stayed here. I mean, COVID also helped a lot too, because like, you know, once it was locked down, kind of didn't make any sense to leave anyways. But, you know, I still call this place home.
What do you mean Taipei has the best offers? I mean, compared to Singapore, I don't think for the salaries we can have better offers.
They gave me about $2,000 US salary, which pretty bad if you think about how much it costs to rent a place in Singapore. Hong Kong, slightly higher, but all in the context of like how much it costs to rent a place. And one of the big things I really wanted my own place. And I've lived with roommates for 17, 16 years, and I was like, no more roommates. I was done with my roommates. I wanted my own place. I wanted my own bathroom. I didn't want people to run into my room, talk to me all day. So like one of the big things I wanted was my own apartment. And I think that was probably the best way to achieve that.
And you started as marketing in Taiwan. What's the first job in Taiwan?
I worked in marketing. So vague sort of like content marketing plus email marketing plus some digital ad stuff. It was an interesting experience. I got to see a lot of like what working in Asia was like. And, you know, it was really interesting because like in California, in America, like the CEO is important, but the CEO is not like the most important. In Asia, the CEO is God. It's crazy. It's like a dictatorship, like a supreme dictatorship. Even if the dictator is like is somewhat benevolent, like not that intense, like it's still, they still act around. There are times when I would see the CEO say something and basically the whole organization would basically like lurch in a direction based on just something they said. And I felt like I was the only one to be like, hey, didn't he not really say like, do this? But, you know, there was a lot of adjustments. It was really interesting. I can see how that can be used in a way to kind of really create great work.
And how did the YouTube channels come around?
You know, I went after about 8 months, kind of was doing nothing with my life, just eating and getting fat. I went to a vacation with my mom and my sister. They came to Japan and we went to Kyoto, Tokyo, and Nara. And I took some pictures of deer and we were sharing pictures of deer and all that. And my mom told me that she didn't know what I was doing over there in Taiwan. She wanted to know more. Like she thought I was like not really sharing anything. And they didn't have group chats back then, or like it wasn't like a big thing. So I came back home to Taiwan. And I opened a YouTube channel and I just grabbed the picture from my vacation and I just called it Asianometry because I like trigonometry and I'm Asian. So I threw that together and I started out with these really bad tourist videos, just videos of like myself hiking, going to this tourist place or that tourist place and with really bad music in the background. And it was so bad. A lot of them are private now, but some of them are still around. You can go see. And there's like, and it's just me walking around. And I send it to my mom and mom would say like, oh, that's interesting. Thanks. It'd be like 10 views or something. And I did a couple, 3 or 4 of those, almost 15 of them actually. And you kind of run out of places. I think you run out of places to go in Taipei. Like I was doing things like going to this remote station in Muta. And I would be filming that and I'd just be like thinking to myself, is this really worth like the 20 minutes it costs to edit this? Because I feel like 10 people don't even care about Muta. Sorry to all the people who live in Muta. But like it was really, really strange. But I thought about kind of making other things because I was really interested in watching these like YouTube documentaries on YouTube. And I thought to myself, you know, why not make a documentary myself? So I edited together, put some really bad music on it, and threw it on there. And no one watched it.
Is this still a documentary about history?
Yeah. It was about some like history, China history, Taiwan history, some Korean history. And that went on for about, 4 or 5 months. And no one watched it, like 10 views, 15 views or something. It was really great. And then suddenly I woke up one day and I had 1,500 followers. And someone had posted my video somewhere on a discussion board talking about like some hardcore right-wing discussion board talking about war and stuff. And I thought it was fun. And that was sort of the beginning. And I decided ever so often I would post a video. Yeah, and the channel went off from there.
So you try tourist and also history. So what is the first videos that you have like huge followers boost?
There was a video I did about the Three Gorges Dam. It was very strange because I was doing videos during COVID. Oh, not during COVID. I think it was kind of during the early days of COVID. I went to spend a couple months with my grandmother in Tainan and took some time off work. So I had like 2 months with nothing to do. You know, grandma doesn't really, she was by herself, but she kind of was just ran, she did her own thing. And I can't really communicate with her. So I spent my time kind of making videos, and I made one video a day because that was my goal. I was going to make one video a day. So I made, I think, 56 videos over 60 days. I've never been so productive, and I never would be.
Why do you want to make one video per day?
You know, if you think about it, when you're running a startup, when you're running a company, and you're being at making videos, what was really important is how fast you can get the videos out, because in terms of cost, in my opinion, cost is very important, because you want to make sure you want to make really good, high-quality video at a cost that's acceptable. You can make something like crazy, maybe Mr. Beast, like blow up something, right? But that costs millions and millions of dollars, and that's really difficult to do, and it's high risk. What I wanted to learn was how to make videos, was how to make videos faster, how to make videos effectively, efficiently, and still maintain a quality that I think is really high, that I'm satisfied with. So my goal, like it was a personal goal, was that I'm going to learn how to make a video. I can make one video a day and just kind of see how that, you know, react. And, you know, one of those videos really blew up. It did like 130K views. It was kind of the biggest video I've ever done up until then. And like, it was about the Three Gorges Dam. And I was like, why is that? That's really strange. It's just a dam. It's like an eight minute long video. Turns out in the comments, there's a lot of people who thinks that it's going to collapse. It was one of those crazy conspiracy things, the people thinking that the big Three Gorges Dam is breaking down. There's cracks and it's kind of blowing up like in the movies. That's when I learned I have a very weird audience. But that was the first big hit. And I made another video about dams. So I think I did four dam videos after that. That was very strange. Strange portion of my life.
Where did this content idea come from? How do you keep the flow of it?
You know, someone who I talked to, who's a bigger creator than me, said that at the heart of it, you have to kind of trust that your audience will like what you like. So I really take that to heart. I really believe that it's important to be doing something that, or looking at or investigating something that interests me, interests myself. If I'm not interested in it, I don't think my viewers are going to be interested in it. And I'm not going to be able to make something that is to like my own quality or to my own height. And I think for me, you know, a lot of it starts with questions of like, why is something the way it is? What is something that happened a long time ago that was kind of important or interesting? And it always starts with that sort of, you know, a little bit of interest and goes from there.
It starts with question, how did you get deeper and do the research? For example, like a dam, I think most of the contents will be in Chinese. How do you do your research and explain that clearly in your YouTube channel?
Google Translate. Lately, like I use ChatGPT to translate because I think they're a lot better at it. I try, you know, mistakes happen. And I think like something that my girlfriend likes to, there's a story that my girlfriend really likes to say. She really, really likes to say. I think she said it like five times now. I was doing a video about Jinzu Naicha bubble tea. And, you know, I was doing the video, researching it. And bubble tea is made up of two components, right? There is the bubble or feng yuan, and there's the tea, ta. Anyways, I'm researching fenyuan and I run it through Google Translate. And Google Translate translate fenyuan as noodle.
Noodle?
Noodle. And I put in my notes, put it all through my script. It says noodle, 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 noodle. Chen Sui Tang, the lady, throws some noodles into sweet milk tea. And, you know, and she reads it because she, I don't know, that was really the only time she read it because I was showing it to her. I said, hey, what do you think about this? And she said, why do you keep saying noodle? Why do you keep calling fenyuan noodle? And I was like, fenyuan is noodle, right? Makes perfect sense to me. There are certain places in SoCal, they put noodles in your milk tea. Like, they will do that. And I thought it was weird, but I was like, hey, you know, Taiwanese culture, they love noodles.
That sounds pretty weird.
Anyways, that was a bug in Google Translate. Fenyuan doesn't really mean noodle. You know, there is some lost in translation issues there.
How do you suddenly change to that? You cover a lot of deep tech. You start from the just walking around and hiking to the deep tech. How did this change?
You know, I think it's ties down to the chip shortage. And when the chip shortage happened, you know, people started talking about Taiji Dian. And, you know, even before the chip shortage, you know, when you're in a coffee shop, you're sitting with a bunch of people, they're constantly talking about Taiji Dian. It's the weirdest thing. And so I already did a video about Taiji Dian up until then, and it actually was doing quite well. And so I thought to myself, you know, there's an opportunity to do this video better.
100 Taiji Dian.
I've done, I think, 40 videos on Taiji Dian.
Wow.
And it's a lot.
So the reason you changed to technology because technology help you to attract lots of viewers and audiences.
The funny thing is that the technology videos don't actually attract that many followers or viewers. It's kind of really funny. It's the history ones, the social ones.
I remember the one hit very big is Japan's wealthy or Korea's wealthy family.
Yeah. A lot of the social issues really hit hard. And people don't really talk about me as that sort of channel. They really think of me as the chip guy. He makes videos about chips and semiconductors. But that's actually more like, if I just did videos about chips and semiconductors, I would not be very big. So, you know, you have to splice in new stuff that, you know, sometimes, ever so often, I'll do a video about, you know, colonialism or monopolies or zaibatsu, as you're talking about, the one I did about Japanese zaibatsu when they broke up the conglomerates. So, yeah. Those are the videos that actually get the most views. It's really interesting, and it's very fun. You know, I like to think of it as the technology videos as like, you know, 有点洗白, wash me clean, because those social videos feel bad doing those.
So it seems like you don't limit yourself to a certain category, but what's your focus now?
Right now, I'm doing a video about Macau casino industry. I've been really interested recently in monopolies and breaking up monopolies. I think that's been really fun. And another one I've been interested in is doing more videos about software. So I did a video recently about, I released a video recently about Unix, which is the old operating system. Very unique situation. And didn't think it would do very well, but it's actually blown up pretty big. So maybe I'm doing another video about SQL, the history of SQL. And I think that'll be pretty fun.
Do you ever encounter a topic that you know the question, but you don't know the answers? So you just need to forget the video?
Not really. No. I feel like if it's a good question, then I'll... There are video topics that I get that are, to me, not interesting, that I know I should do them, that I know that will get a lot of views, or I would know be very, very interested in. And I just don't want to do it because it's kind of boring, or I feel like I got to slog through it. You know, those are the ones that don't really finish. There is one I did about Malaysia's car project. They did something about cars, the Proton, it's called. And I started that video, I got about halfway through it, and I realized, you know what, no one cares about this. It's just a car. They finished the car. They made a car. Big whoop. And I stopped it, and then I just started on something else next. Which just sucks, because, you know, you don't really have a lot of time to work. I'm very busy, so I don't really have a lot of time to work. So doing that sort of thing is very costly.
Aside from the YouTube and technology, I just wonder, how was your life in Taiwan?
It's really nice. I really liked travel.
I really like boba tea.
I do like boba tea.
You love noodles in the milk tea.
I love noodles in my milk tea. I love eating. I have a Facebook album of like 800 food pictures. It's on my personal Facebook. I like to swim. Sometimes I go to Xindian to swim. You can see me swimming with the old akongs and apes. I would like to go to the zoo. I used to go to the, every day on my birthday, I would take the day off and I would go to the zoo. I didn't do that for my last one, though. I still haven't seen all of Taipei Zoo. It's so big.
Maybe you just walk too slow.
I do. I get very tired. Yeah. I walk too slow and I get tired.
It's not that big.
Yeah,
you can have YouTube videos about it.
Yeah, zoo.
I've not done a video on Taipei Zoo. I feel like no one would care. And also, I mean, it's kind of empty. Weekends is pretty crowded, but on the weekdays, it's pretty empty. So once you go to like something like San Diego Zoo or like one of the bigger zoos or something, you get a sense that like Taipei Zoo is a little, the nice word is like a little cozy, but the bad word is to say pretty sad, like pretty small, like low class, but it has its own charm. I really like it. I used to go to Jiaoxi, or I would like to go to Hualien or Taroko and go to all these things, but you know, with the channel nowadays, it's so much, so difficult. Too much work, and, you know, there's a lot of other stuff
going on. Updates every day now.
I write every day now. A video now takes 20, 25 hours to do, which means it's a lot of effort to get two videos out a week.
Compare the Taiwan's life and the US life. What's your favorite part and what you don't like?
You know, living in the United States, living in Taiwan have their own benefits, right? I think the big issue with living in the US is that everything's kind of spaced out, kind of hard to get to places. It's hard to talk to people and get close to people and have like a community around you, because in LA, traffic is so bad that you have to, like, if I want to go see someone living a while, I have to drive for like 2 hours, 1 hour there, 1 hour back, in traffic. In Taiwan, in Taipei, you can just get into an MRT or take a scooter or take a bus, and it's really convenient.
But I'm still unwilling to come to our office.
I do love, I come to your, I'm here in your office here. That is false. That is a false accusation.
Every time I just complain about, well, it took me 30 minutes to go to your office.
We have to beg you to come.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a lot helpful if you had a boba tea here. Then I would show up every time on the dot. No, no, I think I'm going to have a hard change when I get to the U.S. And I'll just be like, oh, getting somewhere is going to take an hour and a half and it's okay. But in the U.S., the things that I like is, like, you know, the food is better. Tacos is the best.
California is best tacos.
That is true. Southern California tacos are the best. In-N-Out, really love In-N-Out. I think sometimes I miss talking in English to people, to other native English speakers. That's a hard experience to find. And I miss the air. The air is really clean over there in the U.S. And, you know, it's really easy to go to nature, like up into the mountain, I think. But in Taipei, particularly, I think the air can get really bad. But, you know, it really is like some things are good, some things are bad. There's no perfect place. So it's just about what kind of want to do, what you like.
Yeah, John just talked about his channel has become too big now and he needs to work every day. So I want to ask Wendy, what's your impression about John the first time?
Cynical guy. I don't think he wants to talk to me at first.
He's too big.
He's already very famous when I knew him. And he was like, who are you? Why are you here? Yeah. But he's very friendly after the first talk. So very nice to meet you. But you're leaving now.
I'm not leaving. I'm just going on a trip. This is my last episode for the Startup Island Taiwan podcast. But I'm very happy to have been a guest host. It was fun.
Yeah, we do this for 2 seasons and we have invited a lot of speakers, including the very big one like Chris Miller, the author of Chip Wars, and Steve Chen from YouTube. So around all these speakers, who got you the most impression or who make you hard to forget?
You know, I kind of, really hard to forget Clayton from CreatorDB. Yeah. But because I'm also a creator, that's why. I think someone I really enjoyed talking to was the, I don't remember his name, but I remember talking, it's the Guitar Hero guy. Yeah. Even though one of the two came, but it still was like a really great conversation. I had a good time talking to them. I enjoyed talking to Dylan Patel of Semi-Analysis when he came onto the podcast. That was fun. He got to say a bunch of really cool stuff and we went drinking after and got sloshed. I really enjoyed talking to Steve Chen. So I think for me, those are some of the highlights. Oh, the blockchain. One of the blockchain startups.
Yeah. You can share about that story.
All the blockchain startups, those were very fun.
You just talk about Dylan, and except the podcast, you also did a big conference in Taiwan. And I think it's also your first time, and it's really big.
Yeah.
A lot of people,
yeah.
And you got quite nervous. Maybe you can share us a little bit about that event.
It was really fun. Because, you know, when Dylan came the first time, we had a small little meetup and just really fun to go talk to the fans, talk to them in person and just kind of talk about, see kind of who's on the other side of the screen. And then next time he came back, so that was in May, he came back in September and he told me, John, I want to do something big when I get here. I want to do something big. And I was like, what do you mean big? Because he wants to do like a full seminar, like a full symposium. So I was like, kidding me? He said he wants to have 500 people there. And so we're like, oh my God, what are we going to do? But we find a convention hall. We rent that. And then all of us start just marketing this hard. Free ticket, show up, learn about AI. We brought guests in. We have everything. And I think we had 500 people sign up.
I need to remind you, I also help you to stick.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Even helped me assign the seating.
I was the worker.
Yeah. I was just calling in all favors, saying like we need a, because just three guys could not handle this much of a crowd. And then it was insane. Dylan hurt his ankle. He needed to get Chinese medicine done on it. And then he was late. And, you know, one of our producers had to drive him over. Thank you, Rita. Into the event. And he showed up with like 30 minutes late. Yeah, it was crazy. But it was really fun. And I would definitely not do it again.
Yeah, that symposium is pretty crowded. And you apparently doing a very good job of creating content that attracts audience and viewers. And Taiwan has a lot of different organizations and projects that want to do content about Taiwan and promote to the global. So can you share some of your tips that how do you do the content that can attract global viewers?
I think it's important to kind of just be strong in communication. I think it's important to be consistent and really keep bringing out new videos and new things for people to see. I think it's important to focus on one or two things and just really hammer that. Find what people enjoy about what you do and just kind of keep sharing that. And I think like it can get very tiring and get very difficult. But I think once you figure that out, I've always felt that getting to from 50,000 to 600,000 was easier than going from zero to 100, zero to 2,000. Zero to 10,000 was very difficult. It took me 3 years to get to like zero to 10,000. And after that, it was only 2.5 years and it's been from 10,000 to 600. It was crazy.
I always remember you said that you want to have a YouTube channel. Don't do it once a week. Do it twice a week.
Twice a week. Every day if you can. But that would be unsustainable and I would become a burning torch.
And for these 3 years, we did a lot of collaboration together. And for every hour, big exhibitions, yeah. We just invite you to come and that you met these startup founders. And you also did a lot of interview with these Taiwanese startup founders. What's your impression about them?
I think they need to be less shy. I think they need to be more, you know, vigorous about promoting their stuff. I think that they need to be more energetic. Not in the sense that like they lack energy, but just they need to be more enthusiastic, show them enthusiasm. I think maybe a lot of these startup things, maybe it's an engineer thing, but a lot of them are also just kind of, they're shy, right? They're very shy and it's hard to get out there and sort of, I don't think that's kind of, for a lot of people, that's kind of what they are used to. Shows, it's a very tough thing. I've done shows before on both sides and it's, you know, you need to have some sort of outgoing personality. And I think that is tough for a lot of people, but I appreciate it. I appreciate that they're going out there and doing it. I think they'll be fine. I think the main key is that they build like a great business and I think they know how to do that, which I think is good.
Yeah, every time at the exhibition, when John finally got time to show up, I was just walking around and ask these founders to pitch story to John, but it's not so time John just didn't satisfied about their stories. Can you also share some tips that how can they improve about that?
I think if you think about a story, what is a story? Like how do you build a story? How do you create a story? A story begins with an opening situation. It is the calm before a storm. Then you create a problem. There's a problem that has to be overcome. There's a problem that has to be faced and overcome. Then you take yourself as the protagonist through a journey to kind of overcome the problem. I've structured the videos like this. You begin with a situation, you begin with a new problem, and then you discuss how and what happens to overcome that problem. And this is applicable not just to history and society, but also into startups and startup pitches. You have a problem, how have you overcome it? And what is the end conclusion where you are better off with your solution, with your journey, with your knowledge? Generally, that's how I structure a story on the channel. It's actually very different from my real origin story. Asianometry is real origin story. Did not have that really sort of thing. But like, you know, you can definitely wrap it up in that way if you want to.
Maybe we can talk about your next step when we will come back to Taiwan.
I'll be back in March. Not that long.
So fast.
In a month.
Everyone's saying you're gonna leave. Leave for 1 month.
Everyone's saying like, oh yeah, you're gone. You're leaving. Yeah. Yeah. But back in March, guys. Why are you all
making it a fuss?
I'm very like confused.
Yeah, maybe when you come back we just still haven't published this episode.
That might actually be the case.
Yeah.
That might actually be the case. So I might already be back, guys, by the time you listen to this. But, you know, I think it was really fun hosting the podcast. And I felt like it was really special to talk to a lot of these founders. And it was a special team. It was also special working with you guys, too, Wendy, Kochi, and our producer, Rita. Like, it was really fun. And I think it's tough to say goodbye to that. But it is what it is.
But you come back on March. Why do you need to say goodbye?
I mean, goodbye to the podcast, podcast.
We are very lucky to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I'm very lucky to send that email 3 years ago to say, I want to meet you and have the coffee.
I mean, the lucky thing is that you guys got to get to do this podcast. It's really fun. Otherwise, you know, I would just show up randomly for no reason and there'd be no reason for me to come here. But I think it's good to have that sort of, you know, we were doing like an episode every week and it was fun to always constantly come to the office because since then, you know, coming to the office is something I appreciate. It's rare to do that.
But what will you do about your YouTube channel? Do you have any future strategy? I know you're still updating every week, but do you plan for something big? Or like you just had a symposium of 500 people attended. Maybe you can do other bigger things.
Yeah, some preview for your followers. What to have next?
I don't know. I think like maybe it'd be interesting to do more like a podcast or make more of a newsletter. So far, it's kind of an interesting future for YouTubers, right? For a YouTuber, kind of what is next? What motivates you to keep going and keep making videos? For me, it's always been on the YouTube side. It's always been really simple. It's always been kind of the stories and the topics and doing all that. I think that's been really interesting. And following my interest, I'm very lucky in a sense that I get to do this job or job quotes, but I can make these videos on something I'm interested in, share that with people who care about it and kind of like the stuff I do. And that's actually, you know, that's a unique privilege. And I don't think a lot of people have that. And I appreciate that. I don't see it as a sense that I need to continue into doing something. I'm already enjoying something that's very privileged. But of course, someday, you know, Asianometry will end. Hopefully it'll be...
When you become a billionaire, Asianometry will just end.
Who knows when. I was watching all the YouTubers who were retiring and like they were giving all these like things to saying, oh, I'm retiring or doing like that. I don't think I'm going to do something like that. I think one day Asianometry would just stop. And then I don't think people will notice. But you know, I think, you know, everything has like a beginning and everything has an end. As I say in Eastern philosophy, or I think the Beatles. But like one day Asianometry will end. And hopefully it'll be in a way that's without scandal and also just kind of just vanish. And hopefully I'll have left an impact on the world.
I want to cry now.
I still remember the first day that when we had this government project, we want to do a first English startup podcast and talk about Taiwan. I was planning so heartily and looking for a best candidate to host. And we're lucky to have John to join us so we can make this podcast come true.
Yeah, perfect match.
Yeah, perfect match.
I'm glad I said yes. You know, I'm proud of what I did here. And I'm proud of everyone of the work of the team. And yeah, I mean, maybe someday we'll see something similar. But I think it was a great stream of episodes.
Thanks for your effort.
Yes, and... if you haven't watched Asianometry YouTube channel, please like, share it, and subscribe.
That's it for tonight. Thanks for watching or listening. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Meet Global newsletter, and I'll see you guys next time.
See you.